M42, number 5A.
Now, on the study assignment, on the point 9, we had about this David story. We had another assignment which says, with each main subject, make 7 very concise summaries of the 7 sub-subjects, subtones, so that the subtones are always an elaboration of the main tones. If it helps, make an additional note of the main points of the biblical story in each subtone. It may serve as an illustration of the metaphysical sense. Did you understand what that means? It means naturally that what we have been doing for the last few days, whenever we come to blending, we must see that the main tone is maintained and that the subtones are always supporting the main tone. We also called it sometimes the dominant, so that we are not deviating from the main tone. And in this way we can really see how a main tone, through the blending of the 7 subtones, gathers its full meaning. So let's take mind as an example, and we go through mind and just try to see how the biblical story can be translated into metaphysical ideas, and how these metaphysical ideas can be epitomized in a way that the main tone is always supported by the subtones. Now, in mind, we have said that in mind we feel that the great point was that parent mind, that creative parent mind, that alone can bring forth the perfect idea. Didn't we say that in roundabout those ways? I don't want to repeat always the same words, but the same tone. And we have seen, therefore, that our story, our life story, if we would put that into our existence, would be that we would have to start out with the parent mind. It isn't, now we must be clear that we don't think back 3,000 years to some kind of a saga or a myth or stories on tales that have been told about those people in the book of Samuel, but that we are thinking in present-day synonymous term tones and actualities. What we could see is that the whole story starts out that we may be barren, that Hannah was barren, we may be barren. It's that point in life where we perhaps begin to realize that we don't know what we are here for. Is there any life purpose? Is there any sense in our life? Is it any worth to live that life? Should we get out of this life, make a shortcut somehow with life and get out of it? And then usually comes the question, but if I want to make a go out of my life, how do I go about it? What shall I do? Yeah? So this is a question that confronts every one of us here. Each one of us is actually born from Peninna in a material way, and we feel the barrenness of the material life, our material existence and ask ourselves, is there a way out? Then the story sets in. The story sets in, and now you tell me, how is that whole tone of mind evolved? Mind is mind. What is the tone there? You can put it into metaphysical language with indications of the biblical symbolism, if you like, so that we know if we have caught the right tone. What is there? Mind is mind. Where do we start our salvation, so to say? Yes? Yes, Ruth?
Well, it would start with the desire for something outside of this barrenness, a pure desire.
A pure desire, yes, a true desire, yes, we would start.
A desire for this light.
A desire for this light, yes. Yeah.
And that light would come
just mind as mind, huh? All right. Also, you're still mind as mind, sorry.
Yes, I was going to say, as the creator, mind is the one creator, and the parent mind is the one creator, and the only cause and origin, which would be coming to the sense of barrenness, and even the mind of Christ there. A little far, but bringing forth that idea, that image of mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, to me, it seems that the first impact is really the sudden awareness that one is barren.
Yes.
Then only comes the desire.
Yes. Yes. That's so, yes. That's where we started. And we feel we are barren, and then something says, let's get out of it. And we are already aware that the awareness of mind is already there. And then Ruth came in and said, then we must have a desire. And at that point I was wondering what comes afterwards, because it's not enough to have a desire to get out of it. That's what... You explained it afterwards, so it's not criticism of your contribution, but it didn't come out perhaps as clearly as I'd like to you to remember it. See, the great point of Hannah was that she had a true desire, but all people have true desires. How true are their desires? What brings a true desire to that standard that it can be accepted to be a true desire and not a false desire? Because she didn't have the desire to have a child. That would be the desire. But she had the desire to have a child for God. That she promised in that desire to give it back to God, which was at that time the way of illustrating what we would say today. Our desire must be so, that it must be mind's own desire. That desire that something is brought forth must be so that it goes back to God, God's own idea, not our desire. That what we want to bring forth in our life is not our highest sense of desire, our highest sense of prayer, but that it is mind's own idea. That's the great point. If we don't start that way, it doesn't work. Therefore, at that point, Hannah always said that I will, when she prayed, you know, for that child, she always prayed, and I will give it back unto the Lord. See? So she could see only that which comes from God and belongs to God will really have fulfillment, is really the idea of prophecy, the idea of light. The light doesn't come from our desires. Yes. This is a big point. So that we see, how could we now summarize this as mind, mind, now we come to the blending, to our art of blending. Huh? We would therefore, if the main tone would be, say, this sense of parent mind, of the one mind, we would see what? We would see that the parent mind, what would you say now, minus mind? Where have you now the dominant? What is now the dominant? The main tone? The parent mind, and then the subtone? Yes, mind, mind is mind, but what is it? Huh? Yes, is therefore the parent mind, huh? But the desire, a deep-felt desire for the parent mind, that's mind, huh? Brings forth the light or the vision, huh? Or the revelation. It's truly creative. Yes, whatever you like to choose. Hmm? And you have mind, the desire for the parent mind, as mind, bringing the light, bringing forth, being able to create something. Yes. If we come to the subtone of spirit, how does what comes in there? If we come to another blending from parent mind and spirit. What does the story tell us here? Hannah gives birth to Samuel.
The idea is born and developed.
The idea is born and is developed, yes. And even more, well, actually I asked only the main point, but the nice point is there, until the child is weaned away. It's really seen that it has nothing material in itself. So we have the birth of spirit, the purity of spirit, until the idea is so pure that it has no more any material concomitant, is no more materially, is no more material. All right, therefore, if we will put that into metaphysical language for our life work, what would we see? Yes? Perhaps, once again, yeah? Born that the parent mind, huh? What's the dominant?
Is born and developed.
From that divine mind, huh? The divine mind, yes, manifests itself now, huh? In true birth, in spiritual birth, yeah? Without any material concomitant, yes? But that which comes out of that divine mind's idea is absolutely pure, huh, the birth. Yeah? Is that so difficult? You tell me, because I may no more be able to judge that, because I have spent so many years on the Bible, you know how it is when you know something, it's so simple, huh? But until one knows it, it doesn't seem to be simple. Yeah? All right. We go further to soul. Mind, a soul. What happened there? Yes?
The true word is identified in many states. For Samuel, as the child of light, is identified by the prophecy.
Yes, yes, very nice, huh? The story runs like that. They tried to show that idea that is conceived of mind and formed through spirit from the parent mind at the point of soul is sinless. Absolutely sinless, because it shows that when Hannah gave Samuel to the priest, therefore back to the priest, you see, identified him with the divine origin, because the priest was a representative of God, you see. So giving a child to the priest was saying, I give the child now back in its nature to God. And the moment he did that, Hannah did that, it was shown that Eli's son did sin, and that the priesthood should be taken away from them. It was said that those two sons shall die, priestcraft should die. When prophecy comes, priestcraft is finished. That's not seen all over in the churches. Churches still feel priestcraft is that which will rule the church. They can't see that the idea of prophecy is much bigger and therefore will wipe out the sense of human priestcraft. So that was the situation, showing that if the idea of the parent mind, that's the dominant tone, is always identified in its idea as completely sinless and as wiping out everything that is sinful. Isn't that very clear in the text, now that we see it? See, Hannah rejoiced in the Lord. That's the first tone of soul. She rejoiced in the Lord. She was the joy of soul, and she gave a song of praise. And Samuel began to minister unto the Lord. Ministering unto the Lord was always a sense of identification with the Lord. You did what was right in principle. And doing that, he began to see that Eli's son, were sinning, and that they had to die. A priestcraft had to die out of us. Yeah. You come to principle, to the subtone of principle. What happened there in principle? Well, there happened that which happens in every Sunday school lesson. Yes? Oh, yes. Yeah, used to it.
I think it's important.
Yeah.
Because could we say instead of priesthood, the moral?
Well, I don't think, that's something else, yes. Priesthood is the... Priesthood is the belief that the ruling of your life is in people, in the priest. He tells you what is allowed to do, and he tells you what is right and what is wrong, and he tells you how, and he can take away the sins from you. So it is just a wrong sense, really, of the working of soul. Yeah? So we come to principle. What happened there in principle? Yeah?
That was when Samuel was called the four times.
Yes, when
and
Samuel was called.
He replied each time, even though Elias, he was just hearing him. And I noticed in this part, it was the first time that the ark is mentioned.
Yes.
And I noticed that it always is mentioned as principle all the way through, as though there the government of principle here is counterfeited by the concept of ER.
Yes.
And of course they had it and lost it and so forth. It seemed to have such an important role.
Yes.
Principle challenge.
Yes, it has. Yes.
And so the obedience of Samuel here to the principle was like his first step of removing his confidence in the ark in their false sense of principle.
What did you feel about the ark, that Samuel's trust in the ark had to be removed, or what did you say?
I don't mean to imply that, but that this is the way the Israelites, that this is where the Israelites had placed their trust. And so even as a child, with his first response to this call was in obedience to principle.
Yeah.
So his preliminary step, all even unknown to him, and yet it was a preliminary step in his deep, pure, childlike desire to adhere to principle.
Yes. Yes. But what has that to do with the ark now? Because that ark is an important symbol. Huh? You said, all right, his preliminary was that in his childlike way, he said, I'm obedient to principle. I hear you speak what I shall do, and I come and do it. Yes, then comes a completely different story about the ark.
Only that this is the first mention of it.
That's the first mention, yes.
And I can't tell you offhand now just what was it says about it in the text.
In the text it says the following, in order to help you, in the text it says following, that the Israelites were at war with the Philistines, and the Philistines conquered the ark, the ark of the covenant, the highest symbol they had for their religion. So the Philistines took the ark home into their country. And wherever they put that ark, they had trouble. They had so much trouble that they said, let's get rid of that ark. And gave the ark back to Israel for nothing. Said, here you have it. You can have all the trouble you like. But naturally for Israel it was no trouble. You see, for Israel never felt safe without the ark. And here we have to be clear its symbolism. You see, that's the difficulty with the Old Testament. They did not have an abstract language. You have always to feel your way with these symbols. You can say to yourself, the ark. Well, just some kind of a wooden thing with some kind of pieces in it, the rituals in it. What's that? To us, it would be the counterfeit of principle, a ritual or anything like that. But to their sense, it was, instead that they say principle, they said ark. You see? That's the difficulty. They didn't know the term principle, though they couldn't say, well, the Israelites stole away our principle. And when they wanted to use the principle, it only made trouble to them, so they said, you can have it. That's what happened. So the ark was a very high symbol of principle, which says, if we take the divine principle and don't know it, it gives only trouble. It's only trouble. If you don't use it in a spiritual way, it only gives trouble. If you use it for a wrong purpose, for a Philistine purpose, it doesn't work. But if you put it back to Israel, there it works. Yes? Didn't you feel that very often in your family or in your relationship or anywhere, that the divine principle you know only makes trouble to the ones that don't like Christian Science? It does, Gives a lot of trouble. That's what he wanted to say. He wanted to say, look here, the idea that is born to us through mind, spirit, and soul is an idea of principle, and it works only in Israel. harmoniously. It only works harmoniously in the spiritual realm. It also works in the realm of belief, but it works there in the realm of belief as overturning and overturning and overturning. Yeah? A beautiful symbol. You may ask, why didn't they say it as I say it? What wouldn't have been easier? Perhaps it would have been easier, but they would not have understood it. If I would send them now my books and say, read my books, 3,000 years ago, they would say, I can't understand what that man is speaking. I don't know that language. I don't know what he's talking about. We have to adapt ourselves to that age, and translate it. So there is a wonderful a symbol, that ark as principle must be brought back to Israel, into the realm of ideas. And therefore Samuel's great call was, return to the Lord, and then you will be delivered from the Philistines. That's the same thing. Return the ark to Israel, and that will free you from the Philistines. That idea has a principle behind itself and will work to free yourself of the Philistines. The Philistines always stood really as the counterfeit nation for Israel. Everything that made trouble was Philistine. And at that time came that demand for a king. You see, that's another point you have to know when reading the Bible, especially the Old Testament. It's no more so true in the New Testament. You know, it's interesting. One must learn a completely new language when you go through the Bible. First, you must know the historical language. When you go through the Bibles up to Kings, the moment you go into the prophets, you have first to learn a new language. You can't somehow, with the language of the historical books, you know what the historical books are, from Moses up to Samuel and Kings. You, with that language, you can hardly approach the prophets. It doesn't seem you can understand the language of the prophets. Because the prophets, first of all, lived in a very different age, around about 500-600 BC, whereas these historical books were first orally transmitted from perhaps way back 2000 BC up to 1000 BC. Up to 6,000 BC, that was their realm, and they had a historical consciousness. Therefore, they were speaking in historical consciousness, in mythical consciousness, in legends and tales and so on. The moment you come to the prophets, it's no more the symbolization through myths and legends and history and so on. You have to learn a completely new approach to the language. In order, if you want to understand the spiritual message in it,